there? Even though you have already confirmed this once, there are still some things that remain unclear, even with regard to the UFO crew, concerning which you said that they were androids. So what were the occupants really, and from where did the aliens come? Quetzal, 74. The Roswell case is a reality because the UFO crash actually took place there, but this is denied up to the present day and will continue to be denied in the distant future by the American military and secret services, as well as by all government agencies, namely with flimsy, changing, stupid, and ridiculous excuses that will only surely testify to the fact that everything actually happened. 75. With the crashed object, it concerned a beam ship from the Reticulum systems. 76. The crew did not consist of natural human life forms but of human androids of a bio-organic nature, which means that they were artificial human androids, which the US Army also got a hold of, some living and some dead, and these were secretly kept in secret stations. 77. With the bio-organic androids, it concerned effective artificial life forms, so not robots or the like, but independently thinking beings, in every way self-capable of making decisions, made out of living material and living organs, bred in accordance with the human beings who are located in the Reticulum systems. 78. In Earth human terms, these bio-organic androids bred by the Reticulum people are actual life forms, and as such, they are respected by the Reticulum people and are also appreciated and treated, for the androids are, indeed, artificial human beings. 79. As such, they stand under the command of the real humans of the Reticulum systems, on whose behalf they also carry out excursions, etc. to foreign star systems and planetary systems. 80. And such artificial human forms were associated with the crash, as I already explained. 81. The intelligence of these android beings stems from a bio-organic consciousness of an artificial form, which is just as capable of development as the consciousness of the normal, natural person, therefore, it can also be creative and inventive. 82. The type of consciousness is designed uniformly and collectively in each android, which means that all of the androids have a uniform consciousness form, and so, they are collectively like-minded, and thus, a collective form of telepathic communication is owned by them. 83. The form of consciousness of these artificial life forms is built on an artificial consciousness, which doesn't correspond to an actual personality but rather to an artificial form, which can think quite independently, act, and decide, as well as develop itself further, but which isn't arranged into conscious evolution but only functions according to conscious instinct. 84. This means that there is very well a capacity for development of the consciousness form, through which ideas are created and thought processes can take place, which are creative, inventive, and progressive and, thus, capable of being developed, but all of this just deals with conscious instinct, and nothing concerns conscious evolution. 85. Either way, the form of consciousness of these bio-organic androids is an artificial organic element, in which no creative spirit is inherent in any form. 86. The form of consciousness of the androids is formed in such a way that it owns a certain independence, in spite of the collectivity, whereby a degree of individuality is given, which cannot be compared, however, to an actual personality in a consciousness sense. Nevertheless, it has its own individuality, which may seem like a contraction to the Earth person because he cannot understand these things in the least part of his mind and still can't make any conceptions of this. 87. He will only gain these conceptions and the understanding as well as the knowledge relating to such android beings in the distant future. 88. The bio-organic androids of the Reticulum people contain an authoritative programming in their artificial consciousness, which prevents that the artificial beings could ever rise over their designers, that is their creators, but the time of their lives is limited to 300 years of devoted servitude to these. 89. Nevertheless, they are entirely free and can in every way decide as to what responsibilities they undertake, exercise, or decline and, thus, whether they want to focus on a task or not. 90. So they are in no way subject to compulsion by their creators. 91. In the manner in which they are biologically created, they are incapable of performing sexual acts and also of reproducing themselves. 92. Their own and appropriate kind of consciousness is contained in their artificial brains, and as I already mentioned, the artificial bio-organic consciousness does not contain a creative spirit form, which would drive and animate this by its own energies. 93. Animation is provided by the artificial brain, which is constructed in such a way that it can absorb and use the cosmic electromagnetic life energies, so that the existence of life is guaranteed. 94. It is this cosmic energy, by which the artificial life forms are animated and also made alive. 95. All this, however, couldn't be recognized by all the doctors, surgeons, and pathologists, etc. in the American secret stations, where the crashed android beings were taken. 96. But how could they, since their knowledge relating to this wasn't in place yet? 97. In fact, it will still take many centuries and even several millennia before the terrestrial scientists arrive at the possibility of creating such beings as the bio-organic androids. 98. Therefore, these beings will remain an unsolvable mystery to them for a very long time, as it is also the case for them with regard to the crashed beings in Roswell. Billy, now that was really detailed. Thank you for your explanations. But one thing still interests me, with you, I've also seen androids, so artificial life forms that can think and act independently. Are these the same as the android beings of Reticulum? Quetzal, 99. On the whole, yes. 100. Only the appearance of our androids is different in nature, for they are created after our likenesses, while the Reticulum androids resembled their creators, who are, in spite of their high technology and various sciences, still very unknowing in terms of really spiritual and creative interests, yet still arranged into a high and liberal culture with expressed human rights. 101. Nevertheless, our directives forbid us from maintaining deliberate physical or telepathic contact with them. Billy, so you have told me once before. Thus, there is nothing more to be said. But now, a question that concerns the eruption of the Vesuvius volcano in Italy, on the 24th/25th of August, AD 79, which destroyed the cities of Herculaneum, Pompeii, and Stabia, by which many people lost their lives. Then, there were greater eruptions again in 1906 and in 1944, even though everything went off lightly. We did, indeed, already talk about this during the last conversation. You also mentioned a number to me, regarding the people who lost their lives, and last of all, you then told me that you could be mistaken and, thus, would have to check to see how many there actually were. Have you now investigated this, and what had actually happened at that time? Quetzal, 102. In the catastrophe, 18,976 people were killed. 103. The eruption of Vesuvius produced 6 pyroclastic flows, that is clouds, which raced at a tremendous speed down the mountain and across the country and which suffocated all life beneath them. 104. In particular, it was the 4th pyroclastic flow that wiped out so many human lives, while the 5th and 6th just did the rest. Billy, 18,976 people. Monstrosity. Was that the whole population? Quetzal, 105. No. At that time, 25,411 people lived in those areas that were destroyed by the volcanic eruption. Billy, then there were still about 4/5 who lost their lives. Quetzal, 106. That is correct. Billy, what is a pyroclastic flow? Quetzal, 107. It is a rapidly spreading cloud of hot ash, dust, and air. Billy, aha, then the people suffocated and burned when the pyroclastic flows swept over them, destroying everything under themselves. Quetzal, 108. That is, once again, correct. Billy, good. Since we're already at it, what was the reason for the destruction of Petra? I mean Petra, the current ruin site with the rock necropolis in southern Jordan. Petra was the residence of the Nabataean king until the establishment of the Roman province of Arabia Petrae in the year AD 106 by Trajan. Petra was also a commercial center in the caravan traffic between Syria and southern Arabia. The city was abandoned after its conquest by the Arabs in the years 629 to 632. To my knowledge, it wasn't until 1812 that the city of Petra was discovered again. Quetzal, 109. The discovery was made by a certain Johann Ludwig Burckhardt, who was born in 1784 and who already died, at the age of only 33, in 1817. Billy, it wasn't a discovery but a rediscovery. In 1829, so 12 years after Burckhardt's death, the first excavations were made in Petra. I myself can remember the very ornate facades of the multi-story grave facilities worked into the rock cliffs. Quetzal, 110. I understand. 111. You were in Jordan for a long time and, among other places, also in Petra. 112. I know the grave facilities. 113. Particularly impressive to me, for example, was Eddaya, the so-called monastery that dates from the 2nd century AD. Billy, I remember. It exhibits a very peculiar mixture of Roman Hellenistic facade architecture and temple architecture, which are connected with the local grave building traditions. But what, now, was the reason for the destruction of Petra? Quetzal, 114. The destruction traces back to a massive earthquake. 115. But not only was Petra destroyed by this but also many other places around the current Gulf of Aqaba and around the Red Sea. 116. Also the earth opened up, out of which kilometer-high chunks of sulfur were hurled, which were distributed over the vast country. Billy, aha. And since we're already talking about down there, what was up with Sodom and Gomorrah, what actually happened there? How were these two cities destroyed? Quetzal, 117. Several factors are to be mentioned, 118. On the one hand, a meteorite fell to the earth and exploded high over the area of the two cities, which would now actually be designated as larger villages. 119. This led to devastating destructions of both cities, triggering a massive earthquake, by which the earth was torn open, like in Petra, and by underground volcanic activity, small and larger chunks of sulfur were flung high and across the country, which also naturally caused much disaster, and by this, as also by the exploding meteorite, many people were killed. 120. The remaining part of the total destruction was caused by the megalomaniac and crazy god of the Hebrews, an extraterrestrial who had his headquarters deep under the Pyramid of Giza. 121. His punishment for the disobedience of the population of Sodom and Gomorrah against his commands was that he let two small atom bombs ignite over the two cities, which finally leveled everything to the ground, killing all humans and animals. Billy, can you tell me, as a doctor and medical scientist, how the preferences for flavors and, thus, for certain foods and drinks basically develop in humans? Quetzal, 122. The flavor preference of humans for certain foods and drinks develops, in principle, in the womb of the mother during pregnancy, which means that what the mother eats and drinks is decisive, and in particular, sweet and good, spicy food and drinks are of special importance. 123. However, if there is an excess of certain flavors, which are received via the food or the drinks of the mother and passed on to the growing child in her womb, then an aversion to these particular flavors may very well arise, as this can also be the case if the mother does not take in certain flavors of food during pregnancy and the child is first confronted with such substances after birth. Billy, then in some circumstances, growing children can become addicted, for example, to alcohol, medicines, or drugs, already in the womb during pregnancy. Quetzal, 124. That is correct. Billy, aha. Then another question, what actually causes ice ages? Quetzal, 125. Ice ages result from climatic variations due to fluctuations in Earth's orbit around the sun. Billy, you said that along with the fact that humans have contributed to the disappearance of the mammoths from the Earth, in the end, also climate changes were responsible for this. Quetzal, 126. That's right. 127. Humans very well eradicated the mammoth as far as possible, but the final extinction was caused by climate changes. Billy, the mammoth disappeared, yes, about 10,000 years ago. Quetzal, 128. That only partially represents the truth because the last of these animals still lived 3,500 years ago, on an island to the far north of today's Soviet Union. 129. However, it is true that about 10,000 years ago, mammoths were very strongly reduced by humans, who hunted them very much for their meat, hides, and bones. 130. The meat was used as tasty food, while the hides and the bones found use for the building of huts. Billy, oh, so that's how it was. But tell me, what do you think of the developmental aid that is operated on the Earth for the underdeveloped third world countries? Quetzal, 131. This is a wrong work of the Earth people that is incomprehensible to us because it goes against all rules of the self-development of peoples but also of the dignity of all people, from whom all possibilities of self-development, self-initiative, and self-progression are irrevocably taken, as a result of such an irrational and irresponsible intervention. 132. The earthly developmental strategy, that of the developmental aid organizations and their supporters and implementers, regarding the developmental aid for the underdeveloped or third world countries, is absolutely wrong because this irresponsible intervention in their affairs creates tremendous damage. 133. As a result of this wrong aid, intervention is made in every form and in every branch of the developmental structure of the underdeveloped countries, which means that these countries and their people become dependent in every relation on the developmental aid and on the goods given to them by the advanced industrialized nations, as well as on all of their achievements, whereby they completely lose their independence. 134. Thus, they lose their freedom, as well as the will for their own natural development, therefore, they cannot make any more progress of their own. 135. Against this, directives that are to be strictly followed would have to exist, which prohibit such developmental interventions that are usually carried out by effeminate, overhumanized, and false humane people of wealthy countries, as well as by adventurers. 136. Developmental aid, as it is practiced on the earth by the wealthy countries and people, is not only destructive but also inhumane, for through this, the self-hindering for those whom the irrational and irresponsible aid is given. 139. For third world countries and their people, the advanced achievements of the higher cultures aren't understandable, they aren't progressive for them and aren't beneficial, therefore, they also can't learn anything from it because they lack the whole career-related development and the associated insights and necessary understanding. 140. The whole development of learning is stifled by the developmental aid, hence, no real progress can be made but only a dependence on the goods and products that are made available by the developmental aid workers and their advocates and organizations. 141. Thus, a real development cannot result, but precisely this is necessary if the person wants to make headway and wants to form his progress by his own responsibility and self-initiative. 142. This is prevented, however, by the irresponsible developmental aid, at least for the countries and all their people who become blinded by the incorrect aid. 143. If there are a few clever ones from these countries and people who are exceptions, then this still doesn't justify the fact that entire countries and their people are developmentally intervened and made dependent on the advanced industrialized nations and are restrained in their self-development and self-initiative. 144. These are some reasons why our directives prohibit such direct interventions in any human cultures, if these are lower than our own evolutionary state, in terms of consciousness development as well as with respect to medical, technical, and overall scientific development. 145. And indeed, this refers to the overall development of all areas and sciences and, thus, not just to individual interests. Billy, that is clear and plain. But now, I would like to direct you specifically towards the future. You promised me that you would bring me material from the prophecies of Enoch for the third millennium or that you would give me various prophecies. Translator's note, with respect to the rest of this particular contact conversation, text below that appears in normal font is figures authorized and official translation. Text which appears in bold font is my own translation. Quetzal, 146. Of course, I will keep my promise, but before I give you a clear account of the prophecies of Enoch, I would like to point out that prophecies are always changeable and can be changed for the better if man makes positive changes in his thoughts, feelings and actions, leading to that which is better and positively progressive. 147. Prophecies always rest upon specific causes, these again result in certain effects, whereby these effects can be changed at any time if only the preceding causes are changed in their form. 148. Therefore, it is possible that negative or evil prophecies do not have to be fulfilled if the preceding causes will be purposely changed in a manner that positivity and good develop instead of negativity and evil. 149. However, this does not apply to predictions, as these rest upon events that cannot be changed, are inevitable and surely and definitely will occur in the future. 150. Predictions rest upon a preview and thus on a direct viewing of the future, and have to do with neither prophecy nor with calculation of probability. 151. So when I make a portion of Enoch's prophecies for the third millennium known to you, it does not mean that they have to be fulfilled, because the prerequisite of fulfillment in each case would be that the already existing causes continue to exist as also continue to be created in the future so that a fulfillment of the prophecies can come to pass. 152. Thus, provided that human beings of Earth will become reasonable, the possibility exists that by a reasonable change in the way of thinking as well as a reasonable development in feeling and an equally reasonable way of acting, everything changes for the better and positive, whereby prophecies do not have to be fulfilled. 153. However, if this transformation does not occur, a very evil, wicked and negative time lies ahead for the Earth and its entire population in the coming new millennium. Billy. Since the Second World War, the thoughts, feelings and actions of the human being of Earth have changed much towards the positive and good, but all that achieved is not enough in my opinion, as the great transformation towards the better has not been achieved yet, neither by the mighty of this world nor all of mankind of Earth itself. In the years gone by, you have made many predictions and calculations of probability as well as mentioned prophetic facts concerning the economic, military and political situation on Earth, whereby I was requested to spread this information, which I indeed have done. Governments and newspapers, radio stations as well as TV stations and many private persons worldwide were informed by me. But the entire effort did not achieve anything. Because up to now mankind has carried on in the old manner and has paid no attention whatsoever to prophecies, predictions and calculations of probability. And the same will most likely be the case in the future, when I receive permission from you in the coming time to spread the prophecies of Enoch for the third millennium. But, nevertheless, I feel that Enoch's message for the future must be made known and distributed, because somehow it may bear fruit yet. Quetzal, 154. You apparently never give up hope. 155. Your optimism is honorable and deserves to be heard by human beings, but the way things have developed throughout this century, there is not too much hope that human beings of Earth will come to their senses and heed your words. 156. This will then be the case only when the prophecies prove to be true or, even worse, have already come to pass. 157. Probably only then will the time come when the defamations against you will end in regard to your contacts with us, although they will long continue to be vehemently disputed by your enemies as well as by pathological know-it-alls and critics who dismiss them as swindle, lies and fraud. 158. The full truth about our contacts with you will be proven in the distant future, and then mankind will accept our help we offer through you. Now what the new millennium will the planet Earth according to the prophecies of Enoch. Quetzal, 159. I will do that in a moment, but I would like to explain before beginning that I am not authorized to give exact indication of years in an official manner. Billy, understood, but that is certainly a good thing. But I'd be grateful to you if you could present the prophecies in a modern, somewhat understandable language, for the better understanding of the people. The old manner of writing and speaking of Enoch might be incomprehensible to most of today's Earth people. This also means that an open language and presentation are desirable, just that the prophecies should not be given in riddles and mysteries, for if I have to publish everything, then open, explanatory, and unencrypted prophecies should be of value, because I think that only understandable prophecies can be of use, since though encryption, the interest of the people fades, for they can understand precisely nothing. My experience proves to me that people are much more responsive and will strive for a matter in more detail and with more interest if something is clearly and distinctly explained to them. Although it is true that through the encryptions of prophecies, etc., some anxiety is reduced, this will only become greater as less is understood, for then, wild fantasies begin to act and to agitate, by what means hellish anxieties and hellish pictures emerge. Quetzal, 160. Your words are correct. 161. Thus, I will offer Enoch's prophecies in an understandable form. 162. So listen, then. 163. If the human being of Earth continues to live in the same way as he has done up to now, forming his thoughts and feelings in the same manner, indulging in the same actions as he has hitherto, then the words of the prophecies of Enoch could not be any clearer. 164. The point in time at which these prophecies will begin to be fulfilled will be when a pope will no longer reside in Rome. 165. All of Europe will then fall victim to a terrible punishment by evil powers. 166. The Christian religion will collapse and the churches and monasteries will end up in ruins and ashes. 167. Monstrous forces will be created by science and will be released by the military forces and armies as well as by terrorists, causing great destruction. 168. Millions and even billions of people will be killed by acts of terrorism, by wars and civil wars, and finally, in some parts of the world, every third human being, and, in other places, every fourth human being, will lose his or her life. 169. The nations of the East will rise against the nations of the West against the East. 170. Many deaths will be inflicted upon the people by fighter and bomber aircraft, and bombs and rockets will destroy and annihilate smaller and larger villages and cities. 171. The people will be completely powerless against all this and will live through 888 days of hell on earth, suffering hunger and plagues which will claim even more lives than the war itself. 172. The time will be severe as never before experienced on Earth. Ultimately, nothing can be bought or sold any longer. 173. All provisions will be rationed, And if a human being steals even a small piece of bread, he or she will have to pay for it with his, her life. 174. Many waters will mix with human blood and turn red, as once in the past the Nile in Egypt turned